Hey Todd, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, Debbie. How are you?
Well, it's very good to be speaking with you again. The last time we talked was in August of 2014 for Dinosaur 13.
I remember it's been a long time.
It's been a very long time, but well worth it with Apollo 11 Quarantine. I love this short. I don't know why nobody has done anything like this in the past 50 years. I'm curious what led you to tell this very specific quarantine story?
Well, I think like a lot of filmmakers, our next feature-length project was postponed due to the pandemic. So this was really a product of the pandemic. We were looking at some of the materials, kind of the stuff that hit the cutting room floor with Apollo 11, and also we were giving a lot of the footage back, prepping a lot of the footage back to get back into the public domain through the National Archives. When they were shut down, we had petabytes of data just sitting on hard drives. Right around March and April of last year, I started looking at this footage, and it was daunting back when we initially made the feature film because the actual quarantine procedures themselves that NASA initiated for these astronauts when they got back to the planet, the chronology of it all was kind of a mess. How everybody, divvied up the work, how they got the lunar material back, how the command module ended up back in Houston, how the astronauts ended up back there. There wasn't a whole lot of great documentation about it. So it wasn't really the story we wanted to tell anyways in the feature film. But for this, I thought it was something that, we could work on and that we could explore, maybe even contribute a little to the historical record on how this kind of little-known story unfolded, and as we got into it, the events of 2020 started happening. You had the racial justice movement of the summer. You had the ramp up to the election and everything in between, and a raging pandemic, to go along with it. So, in many ways, our own experiences, paralleled what was going on at the tail end of this mission in 1969, with the backdrop of everything happening during that time period. It became much more of a human interest story, much more than, procedural, to the point where even the events, of just a couple weeks ago with the riot on the Capitol, we had footage of the astronauts giving speeches and, at that same House chamber, where that riot happened. So, I think the story, now as we sit here is even more prescient than what it was when I just thought it would be a simple, hey, we all have to wear masks, and so did these guys 50 plus years ago.
You know, it's funny because as I was watching it, as we started getting into it, I thought about Buzz's words at the Capitol speaking to Congress all those decades ago. And I was so thrilled that you included them at the tail end of this doc. You know, the lessons we have learned from Apollo 11 will determine just how great a leap we have taken. And and I'm thinking, yeah, we haven't learned a whole heck of a lot when you look at it in current context of what's recently happened. But I was so happy to see that included. How did you go about structuring this? Because you've got your day 5, 7, 8, 9, 10, 16, 18, 21, and 37 days after quarantine. And you put a lot of cinematic beauty into this, using the tools in the toolbox with your split screens, with different angles. I love the split screens where you've got an overhead shot taken from the helicopter of the capsule being lifted, and then we've got a frontal shot of that of it sitting in the ocean. How did you go about designing this from a cinematically structural standpoint, Todd?
Well, it really is a throwback to the large format era, the kind of the proto IMAX films of these mainly one-off screenings of large format films from the 50s and the early 60s. To get an audience into a theater and have them experience a film, these are tools in which you do it. I'm just an enormous fan of a lot of those films from back then. Some of them tend to be a little cheesy, but when you're dealing with the archive materials, to put people, I don't think there's any better way to put people right in those, right in that moment than to do that. I don't need to, be told what I'm watching. In fact, I'm a fan of if I like a film, I'll watch it several times, sometimes hundreds. So, a big influence on me was, like Woodstock or the films of, Francis Thompson, where you know, they're almost travelogue films. You're not necessarily a fly on the wall. You're part of the experience. And I think there's a cinema is such a young medium. It's only been around for, as far as art forms go, a little over 100 years. So we have a long way to go and a lot of things to experiment with. I think the films that I want to do and the techniques I want to explore are throwback to that time period of experimentation, but also kind of a new language. So that's what we wanted to do with this one. And I'm very proud of the team that we put together too. I've worked with a lot of the same people. We're continuing to kind of hone and develop, I think our skill set. So hopefully, I'm very proud of these films, but I'm very proud of what's coming up next too.
And I can't wait to see it, because I love what you do. Conscious decision not to have any talking heads over here. You let the footage speak for itself. And Matt Morton does some beautiful, beautiful music for this one. How do you determine what you're looking for sonically to pair up with these images, which are so powerful in their own right?
Yeah, I think, it really begins first with the sound itself. What does it sound like to be there? If I see, a little bird off in the distance, I want to hear that. So working with Brian Eimer and Eric Milano, our sound designers on this, they just do such a fantastic job, and we do a lot of proximity audio editing. So particularly for the IMAX experience, you have a plane that's taking off from an aircraft carrier, I mean, we'll spend a week trying to tweak that, just get it right, what that sound actually sounds like from the wind and the sound of the engine of the aircraft carrier, the sound of the engine, the guy's clothes flapping in the wind. Just to really put yourself there. And then Matt, who is my longest collaborator. We've known each other since we were kids. Just like everyone else, we speak, a shorthand. And with this, he did a lot of pre-composition. So he pre-composed a lot of the film, which really gave me the freedom as an editor to really structure and really work on the tone of films. So you could kind of develop more of a soundscape. But where he's really great at is filling in those gaps. I like to think Matt's music is a character in the film. Apollo 11, when we had all these great, rockets or any kind of engine ignition, that doesn't sound like anything when you're in space, and we wanted to stay true to that. But that doesn't mean we can't have, the feeling, the emotion of what that is, and that's reflected in Matt's score. And the same as, in this quarantine short.
Yeah, I think it's fabulous. Was there any more footage that you contemplated putting in here, or do you think you really gleaned the best of the best for telling this quarantine story?
Well, for the quarantine story, and the way that I wanted to tell it, yes. We did an exhaustive search. There are a few reels, just because we're perfectionists, that we couldn't get access to, that I would like to film scan the original ones that are you know, under lockdown at NASA's facility. But other than that, yes. But having said that, you know, our part of our project wasn't just the film, it was the overall project itself, where we film scanned all of these Apollo missions and then even some earlier missions or projects that NASA was working on. So there's an enormous archive there that's going to be available to everyone. So I'm very interested to see what future filmmakers, once the National Archives and NASA get back on their feet, the doors are open, and they can organize and disseminate this stuff and preserve it for the public to get it out there, to see what kind of stories they can tell, because it's really endless. I mean, think about Apollo itself. You could tell a story about how they got the cameras up there, you know?
Yep.
John Hirosaki, who was the one of the first Asian-American astronauts, or I'm sorry, engineers at NASA, was actually in that mobile command trailer with the astronauts, and then flew back and was in quarantine with those guys. His story alone is worth its own documentary. So the Apollo project is the gift that definitely keeps on giving, and I can't wait to see what other you know, films people make of it.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's spectacular. I love the restoration. What's the restoration process for this footage? Because I know how a lot of this film footage from those days has denigrated. A lot of it is sitting in the basement of our family home in Philadelphia that my dad got while he was working with ABC. So I know how badly it denigrates. Was the restoration project challenging, or was that more encompassing with the feature?
It was insanely challenging. I mean, I tell everybody, if you know, friends and family, archive your projects, archive anything you have now, digitize it, get it out, because you're right. These things, no matter what medium they are, gonna you know, every year that they're spent out, they're like, you know, dinosaur bones. Every year they're spent out in the, you know, in the season they weather out. So the more you can preserve them, the better. But yeah, it's really a testament to the wonderful team at Final Frame, which was the post-production facility that we used. They invented a brand new prototype scanner that we used a couple years ago for Apollo 11, the feature length. They've since made that technology even better. They're able to scan even down to 16 millimeter and large format film and greater resolutions, which is phenomenal. But the actual restoration of it is a real art form, and the conform and color of that. And it's a testament to that team at Final Frame, Will, led by Will Cox, and also, you know, the great colorists and people at IMAX, Lee Weimer and everyone she works with. And it's but it's on all of us to do this. You know, the National Archives, to their credit, which is the end repository for all of these materials that came out of the NASA program, they've preserved them for, you know, the better half of 50 years and kept them in climate-controlled cold storage where, you know, they were waiting for people like us to come along. But they need help. They need all of our help, you know. So, you know, if you're a filmmaker or you're a historian and, you know, you want to get access to these materials, and you have any kind of budget, go in there. They need help. They're understaffed, underfunded, undermanned. And, you know, these, like you said, just like in your basement, these things aren't going to be around forever. So we need to preserve them.
Yeah, and one last question before I let you go, Todd. I always love talking to you. It's so insightful and educational, and your passion comes through. But I'm curious, these films that you do are such a gift to all of us and for generations to come. What is the gift that telling these stories gives to you?
Well, I think, you know, the challenge of what we're going through now, you can look at these patterns of history. I mean, we're in unprecedented times, but they were in unprecedented times in the late 60s. They were in unprecedented times in the 1850s with the ramp up of the Civil War, the aftermath of the Civil War, you know, with Reconstruction and the promise of Reconstruction and, you know, fighting a couple of world wars in the aftermath of that. So, you know, what I get, what's gratifying for me, is that there's always this message of hope, you know, this endurance of it, you know, You know, I like to think that, you know, this this experiment of our democracy will survive. It gets tested time and time again, and you see that, you know, through the historical record. And you really see it through the archival footage that's generated. You know, as I said before, it's a young medium cinema, but you can look back even to the motion studies that, you know, Edward Muybridge was doing in the 1870s and onward, or even further back to when photography in the 1850s, you know, started here. And you, for the first time, see written word, written historical documents translated into photographic evidence. And that's really compelling. And then you put audio on top of that. And now you have much more of an understanding of what we all went through. And in doing so, you get a sense that, you know, if we all band together, you know, if we can all work together, find a way for common ground, that, you know, there are better times ahead. And I think that that's repeated time and time again through, you know, the archival process. And
Absolutely. Well, Todd, again, thank you. And can you tell me what the next thing is that you had to put on hold? Or is that still a secret?
Well, we got a big nonfiction documentary that we're working on, and we also have a fiction thing that I'm really excited about. The nonfiction thing, I will say, we are film scanning a number of materials. It's just an enormous project. We did 600 plus reels, film reels for Apollo 11. We'll be into around 2,000, I believe, for this one. So it's just a really big project, but I'm really excited, and I'm hoping that, you know, cinemas around the world will all be open by then in a couple of years, and we can get it out. I'm really excited, and we'll let you know. You'll be the first to know. How's that?
I can't wait, Todd. I am chomping at the bit. Again, thank you so much, Todd, and I can't wait to talk to you again.
Thanks. You too.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great day.
Okay, see ya.
Bye-bye.